Shalom, Saints. Welcome back to After Hours, an area in which we can look at news, views, current affairs from a biblical perspective as we try to make sense of this crazy, crazy world that we live in. If you're new around here, please do all the good stuff, like, share, subscribe, get involved with the comments if you're led. Now, today's episode, we're going to jump straight in. We're going to be revisiting a theme that we've looked at in the past, and a theme that I think will continue to develop in the world, correlating with biblical prophecy and the interpretations thereof. So we're going to take a dive into the world of the timeline of the technological tyranny that we find ourselves in. This is a subject that we've continuously covered throughout After Hours, as I feel it's extremely pertinent to what's taking place in the world and the spiritual implications of the strange goings-on that we see in technology and politics and just in the general landscape of world affairs. So let's jump straight in. So in a previous episode, I think it was the rise of the techno serpent, we took a look at the role of the spiritual aspect and the spiritual backdrop behind technological advancements, and how I believe and feel that there is a very strong antichrist agenda that's being played out in real time. And some can say that this may be conspiratorial, but for those who have a biblical lens on these things, have a different interpretation. So I want to start with a scripture in particular. Now, I've said many times on this show, it's biblical interpretation and scholarly commentaries may not necessarily be my forte, but I feel it's always good to have a scriptural foundation to what we're looking at. Now, we're going to be looking at Daniel 2, the infamous interpretation of Nebuchadnezzar's dream. I think we're all familiar with the synopsis, but we'll just read from verse 31. So, you, O king, were watching, and behold, a great image. This great image, whose splendor was excellent, stood before you, and its form was awesome. This image's head was of fine gold, its chest and arms of silver, its belly and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay. You watched while a stone was cut out with hands, which struck the image on its feet of iron and clay and broke them into pieces. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold were crushed together and became like chaff from the summer threshing floors. The wind carried them away so that no trace of them was found, and the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. Now, I think it's generally considered that the consensus on this, as revealed by Daniel in his interpretation, is how each part of the statue in the dream represents a different kingdom, a different dominion, a timeline of rulership. And obviously it goes further into the description of this. Now, what I wanted to focus on is the mixture of the iron and the clay. Now, this mixture, it has been alluded to that this could be in reference to perhaps this period of time that we find ourselves in, that we've obviously had the Babylonian Empire, the Assyrian, the Roman, etc., and arguably we're still in the Roman part of that. But the point being, this mixture of the clay and the iron, it's alluded to that we're looking at the amalgamation of a kind of transhumanist element of the mixture of the iron of technology with the clay of humanity, that Adam was made from the dust of the ground, and that we are, of course, made in that same way, that we are a composite of that earthly clay, as it were, and that the time that we live in is this mixture of the two. So from a prophetic perspective, I feel like we're in an interesting time in terms of this amalgamation of man and machine, and how the role of the Antichrist, either the spirit of or even the personification of, will play a role in the kind of end of day scenario. So whilst I'm personally still very flexible when it comes to these interpretations and where we are in that timeline, as I said before, I may not be a scholar, but I feel like it's part of the discernment of the times that we're in, that this technological advancement is an indication, perhaps, of where we are in the timeline of the escalation of, you know, the agendas at play. We know that the kingdoms of this earth, who is ruling them, who the prince of power of the airwaves is. We have the infamous mark of the beast and how that may well be integrated. So we're going to touch on all of these elements in today's show and hopefully make some sense of what that means in today's current events. So the first article I came across recently, which I made attempts to kind of break down this relationship between mysticism and the spiritual backdrop to this technological advancement and big tech and Silicon Valley. And I thought this article was great in attempting to kind of summarize this. So this is a big tech, Kabbalah and Gematria. Again, for those who may not know, Kabbalah is considered an extension of what's known and considered as Jewish mysticism. In its origins, it's a hodgepodge of ancient Babylonian mystery schools with some traditional Jewish philosophy and some, higher science, all thrown into one. And, you know, there are those of you who may not be of interest or even care for that kind of thing, but I feel that it has a massive part to play in end times prophecy. So yeah, if you haven't already, get yourself comfortable, get your brew on the go, and we'll dive in. So as I delve into the mystifying realm where major tech companies such as Apple, Tesla, Google, Meta Platforms, formerly Facebook, and others intersect with the ancient traditions of Kabbalah and Gematria, I am immediately struck by the profound implications of this convergence. In this essay, I will embark on a critical exploration of the role played by Kabbalistic principles and Gematria in the rise of these tech giants, examining the motivations, methods, and consequences of their esoteric practices. Now, even just from a personal perspective, I've always been fascinated by the premise of, you know, where do ideas come from? Where does inspiration actually emanate from? And I think the more that you dig into this principle of all things that manifest in the physical have a connection to the spiritual, that we can hazard a guess that a lot of the things that we see take place, you know, embodies this principle, whether it comes to inventions, technology, and so forth. So I think this provides a very tangible explanation of where, you know, where we have this relationship. Of course, we can take it back to, you know, fallen angels and the technologies that are passed on. And I believe that we have this the same principle happening in real time. Okay, to begin, it's essential to understand the historical and cultural context of Kabbalah and Gematria. Kabbalah, a form of Jewish mysticism, explores the esoteric interpretations of the Hebrew Bible and the universe's underlying spiritual principles. Gematria, a component of Kabbalistic practice, assigns numerical values to Hebrew letters, enabling practitioners to uncover hidden meanings within texts and words. These ancient traditions have captivated seekers of wisdom for centuries, offering insights into the mysteries of existence. Again, I'm not going to get into massive deep apologetics about the nuances of Kabbalah and mysticism and truth and wisdom and all of that, because I believe that's up to the discernment of the individual. I can say that the whole area is extremely fraught. There is indeed truth involved. You know, Gematria in some applications may not necessarily be a form of mysticism. However, in certain contexts like this, it does fall into the realm of magic and divination and all that kind of woo-woo stuff. Now, the rise of major tech companies like Apple, Tesla, Google, and Meta platforms have been nothing short of meteoric, reshaping entire industries and transforming the way we live, work, and communicate, while conventional explanations attribute their success to innovation, entrepreneurship, and strategic vision. An alternative perspective suggests that Kabbalistic principles and Gematria may have played a significant role in their ascent. Again, these ideas and these things aren't just being plucked out of nowhere. There's something more to what's going on. One potential explanation for the influence of Kabbalah and Gematria on tech companies' rise lies in their founders' personal beliefs and practices. Visionary leaders like Steve Jobs, Elon Musk, Larry Page, Sergey Brin, and Mark Zuckerberg have been known to explore unconventional ideas and spiritual philosophies in their quest for innovation and success. Musk, for example, has expressed interest in the mysteries of the universe and nature of consciousness, while Zuckerberg has pursued mindfulness, meditation, and other contemplative practices. Now, with all of these individuals mentioned, it can be quite difficult to actually extrapolate to what point they are in collusion with these mystical practices. You know, on one end of the scale, you could say, well, they could fall into these things accidentally. On the other end, they could be part of, you know, long bloodlines that have inherited this knowledge and information. You have many hat tips with regards to how some of these individuals have, you know, pursued spiritual principles openly, Elon Musk being one of the bigger proponents of that. But we can clearly see that there's a bigger backdrop when it comes to these folks and their endeavors. It's conceivable that these tech giants, inspired by the timeless wisdom of Kabbalah and Gematria, have integrated elements of these traditions into their company's culture, ethos, and decision-making processes. By tapping into the symbolic and numerical richness of Kabbalistic teachings, they may have gained insights into the hidden patterns and connections that underlie the digital landscape, guiding their strategic choices and technological innovations. Now, this is so abundant in the symbology of the logos, in the naming of software. It literally is just absolutely saturated with spiritual spiritual signatures, and this is throughout all areas of technology and industry. I've in my experience of working for, you know, different companies, I've seen it in, you know, like Greek gods being named for parts of software, and you're thinking like, why is this always, you know, why is this always the case? Moreover, the integration of Kabbalistic principles and Gematria into tech products and algorithms may have endowed these companies with a competitive edge in the marketplace. By infusing their products and services with layers of symbolic meaning and mystical significance, they may have cultivated a deeper connection with consumers, tapping into their subconscious desires and aspirations. This strategy of symbolic branding and marketing could have contributed to their brand's resonance and loyalty, driving customer engagement and market share growth. Furthermore, the application of gematria in data analysis, algorithmic optimization, the artificial intelligence may have empowered these companies to unlock new frontiers of innovation and discovery by harnessing the numerical patterns and correlations encoded within vast data sets. They may have gained insights into user behavior, market trends, and technological breakthroughs that eluded conventional analytical methods. This fusion of ancient wisdom with cutting-edge technology could have propelled them to the forefront of their respective industries, fueling their rapid expansion and influence. Again, it's like there's nothing that's happening by chance here. You know, this idea of somebody just stumbling along these areas, it's not the case. However, the rise of major tech companies like Tesla, Google, and Meta platforms due to the use of Kabbalah and Gematria raises profound ethical questions and societal concerns. One pressing issue is the potential for exploitation and manipulation of esoteric knowledge for commercial gain. When tech companies co-opt sacred traditions and spiritual practices for profit-driven purposes, they risk trivializing and commodifying these ancient wisdom traditions, reducing them to mere tools in the pursuit of market dominance. I've touched on this before, this principle of utilizing, I guess, contraband means of spirituality, i.e. divination and accessing things beyond the veil in order to gain some form of advantage, whether it be monetary, whether it be personal, whether it be in relationships. I often feel at the heart of a lot of these practices, whether it's witchcraft, New Age, a lot of it is about the self and gaining advantages and trying to find that cheat code into, like, you know, the shortcut through to better yourself or your environment or your social standing and position. And this is just a high end version of that, I feel. Moreover, the uncritical adoption of Kabbalistic principles and gematria in the tech industry may have exacerbated existing inequalities and reinforced systemic biases. As algorithms powered by these esoteric techniques shape our online experiences and influence our decision-making processes, they may perpetuate harmful stereotypes, discrimination, and polarization. By imbuing technology with mystical significance, tech companies run the risk of amplifying societal divisions and exacerbating social injustices rather than fostering genuine spiritual growth and collective well-being. Now, I'm less concerned or perturbed about this principle of this almost like moralizing, accessing spiritual customs. I think the principle that we should be more concerned with is how the principalities on that side of the veil are utilizing these principles in order for that agenda to prevail. Now, of course, we can talk about the sovereignty and the providential plan of Yah and how all things are conforming to his plan of redemption for his bride and all of that stuff. That's all well and good. However, in that, we've got a whole section of spirituality, spiritual war taking place where we are being attacked and used through these technological means. That's where I feel that the real danger is. When ultimately, all of this prophecy is going to be fulfilled in very close relation to technological advancements. That's why I feel that this area is fascinating and highly important to understand. In light of these concerns, it's imperative for tech companies to approach the integration of Kabbalah and Gematria with caution, humility, and ethical awareness. Rather than treating these ancient traditions as mere tools for enhancing profitability and optimizing algorithms, companies should engage them thoughtfully and respectfully, acknowledging the cultural and historical significance of Kabbalah and Gematria, consulting with experts and practitioners, and considering the broader societal implications of their actions. In conclusion, the rise of major tech companies like Apple, Tesla, Google, and Meta platforms, due to the use of Kabbalah and Gematria, offers a fascinating glimpse into the intersection of technology, spirituality, and commerce. While the influence of esoteric knowledge on their success is speculative, as I mentioned before, it underscores the enduring allure of ancient wisdom in the digital age. By critically examining the motivations, the methods, and consequences of their esoteric practices, we can gain deeper insights into evolving relationship between technology and spirituality in the modern world. I think this is a really great piece of writing. But I think the real backdrop is the role of the bringing forth of the Antichrist, even perhaps the personification of the Antichrist, through this Kabbalistic amalgamation of ancient philosophy and technology. Again, I feel like this is a very deep subject in itself. There's some great literature to dive into to get that perspective. I think it's curious that even in the naming of say Mark Zuckerberg's company Meta, you know, we have the Kabbalistic fable of Metatron, who is essentially referred to as the kind of lesser Yahweh. Again, this is a part of a very longer story. There are some that hold the belief that this was in fact that Metatron is in fact a transformed Enoch. This is where we have the relationship with Enochian magic. All of this mystical woo-woo stuff. There is indeed a crossover in Silicon Valley and whatnot. Now, what does this have to do with the price of fish? Now, we can't really look anywhere in the media without seeing our buddy Donald. And I did an episode previously where I spoke about this principle of the denigration and ultimately the vanishing, if you like, of a political of any form of conventional politics. Actually really making much difference in terms of this this speeding up of technology. In a nutshell, I'd advocate that it's less about a democratic and republican or left or right. It's more about a transhuman agenda being played out, irrespective of who's in power, who's in charge, who's voting for who. That essentially public opinion is being swayed by, legislation is being changed for the development and the progression of technological advancement. But it's just technology, some people say. It's just how things are going. There's an element of that. However, again, all of these companies, all of these technologies, I believe, are heading in towards a direction that is Antichrist in its essence, and is essentially an enemy to the gospel. So, with that being said, tech leaders backing Donald Trump presidency. The full list of key supporters. Now, the narrative is that this is, in some respects, this is God's anointed. This is the chosen one. This is the Cyrus of this times, who's going to bring back great change and restore godly principles, and almost this savior element to the president in waiting. There are those on the flip side who would even say he is the embodiment of the Antichrist. Stick it on the list of everybody else at the moment. Again, he may not be the personification, but do I believe the spirit of is in operation 100%? Birds of a feather flock together. Now, tech leaders backing Donald Trump presidency, full list of key supporters. And again, this is surface level to an extent. Like, these guys are all, you know, the faces of the company. And we can argue that these are maybe controlled by even richer people in the background. But anyway, an increasing number of tech leaders have endorsed President-elect Donald Trump ahead of his inauguration. The inauguration has already raised a record $170 million. Trump has promised to support big tech's interests by removing certain guardrails. Again, why is Donald Trump important in this? I've often cited that the principle that a lot of sociological and philosophical elements of progressivism, i.e. what's being taught in schools, what's being reported in the media, is often attributed to the left. But I feel like the money and the tech is more right-leaning, is probably the best way I could ascribe that. So essentially, they're both going in the same direction. It's the same team, but two different facets of that. And Trump is part of that facilitation. In the lead up to Donald Trump's 2024 landslide victory and inauguration, several prominent tech leaders have joined in extending their support to the president-elect. This support has led Trump's January 20th inaugural committee to raise over $170 million, breaking the previous record of $107 million set before. Why tech leaders back Donald Trump? Throughout the Biden administration, several tech giants, including Meta, Google, and Amazon, have faced heightened scrutiny from antitrust regulators over monopolistic practices and content moderation policies. At the same time, AI companies such as NVIDIA and OpenAI have faced heightened challenges from stringent export controls and regulations around AI safety. Trump has promised to remove any of the guardrails impeding big tech's interests, with several tech leaders expressing their support of the president-elect. Here is a complete list of the tech leaders who have shared support for Donald Trump ahead of his presidency. And again, just for a bit more context as well, a lot of these companies, particularly the social media, are becoming bastions of free speech. You know, a lot of the things that Elon Musk has been doing has been to bring this restoration of protect the freedom of speech. And working with Donald Trump is going to kind of facilitate that, which I think is a bit of a red herring. So we've got Elon Musk. Again, it's like... The so-called self-proclaimed dark gothic MAGA, you know, sending rockets into space to Mars. Like, if you believe the stuff that he's been doing, then I don't know what to tell you. But again, Elon Musk has undoubtedly been president-elect Trump's biggest ally in big tech so far. Over the past 2 years, the two billionaires have gone from trading public jabs to effectively agreeing to work together on America's future. Musk heavily bankrolled the president-elect's campaign, pledged to contribute $45 million monthly. He's just been all over it. And we've seen his stock rise massively in the media. Again, a polarizing individual. They're so hard to pinpoint in terms of who they are, where they've come from, how they get to be such like big players and have such a massive say. But all of these are transhumanist in their essence. Mark Zuckerberg, Meta, also made moves to support President Trump's administration. Following his landslide victory, He donated $1 million to Trump's inaugural fund, making a significant shift in the company's political engagement. The contribution was accompanied by a pair of Meta smart glasses, demonstrated a direct outreach of technology to the incoming president. Interestingly enough, Zuckerberg, who previously dined with Trump at the Mar-a-Lago resort, recently announced a U-turn on Meta's stringent censorship policies, a clear effort to align with the Trump administration's priorities. So basically, Meta were fact-checking, censoring, or being censored in terms of a lot of things, especially around the pandemic, and were basically the government's lackey, for want of a better term. And since the change in power, Zuckerberg's been saying that they'll be relinquishing the fact checkers and the censorship under the notion of free speech, and he's just aligning himself to it. We've got Jeff Bezos, Amazon, Sam Altman, OpenAI, Sundar Pichai, Google, Jensen Huang of NVIDIA, Tim Cook, Apple. We're all very well familiar of Apple and the symbology surrounding it. And we've got Peter Thiel, Palantir. Palantir Technologies co-founder Peter Thiel has a long history with the president-elect. These guys are all buddies. They're all part. They're all in the same clubs. Last August, Senator J.D. Vance used his longtime supporter, Silicon Valley billionaire Peter Thiel, to support Donald Trump's bid for the White House. Talking to the Financial Times, Vance said, "I'm going to keep on talking to Peter and persuading him that, you know, he's obviously been exhausted by politics a little bit, but he's going to be really exhausted by politics if we lose and Kamala Harris is president." Thiel previously supported Trump in 2016. Now, Peter Thiel and Palantir, they're of, again, I don't think they're the good guys. They were instrumental in rolling out equipment to the NHS during the pandemic. They do all sorts of stuff. Again, Apollo. They do a lot of work, and they have done a lot of work in the Ukraine-Russia situation, new age of technology, warfare, and deterrence. Now, so what? You know? So what does it matter that these companies have aligned with Trump? Why would it matter? As I've said before, everything's being driven to a purpose and a point, and these figures are no longer making decisions for the benefit of the people. Whether they ever were in the first place or not is debatable, but I think it's just really important that we identify that these people aren't our friends. They're not doing things for our benefit. And we need to keep an eye on these developments to ascertain, events taking place of biblical proportions. Let's crack on. Trump announces $20 billion investment in data centers by Dubai billionaire. Again, this is another reason why we should care. Why does it matter? Everything that is taking place from a technological point of view is data driven. And for those of you who are, you know, of the thinking that there is a consolidation of the hive mind, as it were, that all things are going to be accountable and recordable and measured and ultimately controlled by technology, whether it's through AI itself or companies that are running these programs. A lot of our this is about data and how we live in a data-driven world. And this, again, this is something I've spoken about in the past. But again, I don't think this is any coincidence.
I'm thrilled to announce today that DMACC will be investing at least $20 billion over a very short period of time into the United States, and they may go double or even somewhat more than double that amount of money. It's a great thing, and I believe he will say that he's doing it because of the fact that he was very inspired by the election. They wouldn't do it without that election, I can tell you. A lot of people wouldn't. But it's an honor to have such a great investor investing in our country. The investment will support massive new data centers across the Midwest, the Sunbelt area, and also to keep America on the cutting edge of technology and artificial intelligence. He's very big into the data centers, and that's going to be a very hot item in the coming years, as you know, with AI. In particular, the first phase of the project will be in Texas, Arizona, Oklahoma, Louisiana, Ohio, Illinois, Michigan, and Indiana, those places.
It's been amazing news for me and my wife.
Just as a side note, it's really strange how a lot of this movement to Texas. And it's a bit odd in thinking, but I think we first had Joe Rogan with the podcast. He was based in California, moved to Texas. Why is he important? I guess because he has the largest platform in media right in the world right now. All of these individuals that we're speaking of have all appeared on his show. Elon Musk has moved part of the X department to Texas. Zuckerberg has just moved the censorship department to Texas. There's something about the law of, I don't know, but it's just funny how they're all migrating to a different state away from California. I don't know what that means, but strange.
My family, when he was elected in November, we've been waiting 4 years to increase our investments in U.S., a very large amount of money. We are a company operating in more than 20 countries around the world. We have delivered more than 45,000 luxury units and another 45,000 in the pipeline. In data center, we are in 10 countries around the world, in Asia, Europe, and Middle East. And we're very, very excited now with his leadership and his open strategy and policy to encourage businesses to come to U.S. For the last 4 years, we've been waiting for this moment, and we're planning to invest $20 billion and even more than that if the opportunity in the market allow us. But at the moment, we're planning $20 billion in data center, catering for the AI and cloud business for the hyperscalers.
So I know that part of the allure of Trump is this he's the guy, he's the business guy who gets the deals done, who can drive the economy. There's less of a political flavor, more of a business-driven one. So, you know, this whole mantra of making America great again is all about the deals that suit America and to navigate a drive economically, which is whatever. That's neither here nor there. I really want to hammer home is this principle of him being some kind of godly institution. Now, of course, all leaders and rulers are allowed to and are part of God's plan, as I mentioned before. But this kind of perception of him being anointed and... It's the opposite in terms of the things that he says and the things that he does. and are two different things. Now, you can get into the semantics of like, well, it's not actually him, it's other people that are pulling the strings, he's just the front man, etc. And I do get that. That's fair enough. But I just want to focus on this difference between restoring or projecting godly principles, but actually facilitating an actual anti-Christ agenda through the advancements that he's making, both in business and legislation, and the people that are correlating in and around his administration. For any of those that are still like on the fence about, you know, who he is, and you know, I think he's a godly guy. It's like you need to take a look. Yeah, so this company, I don't know a great deal, but again, it's all data driven. And again, it's this step away from how everything is data driven and less in the hands of men. Now, with this data, obviously we're looking at a kind of unification of you know, global principles. A lot of these things are presented in terms of, you know, nations trying to strive to do the things for their own nation, but essentially it's the amalgamation of a more global agenda, which again I would advocate is controlled by an evil force, essentially. These data centers are something that are instrumental in driving the automation of our civilization, essentially. This coming together, this amalgamation, as we said, the mud and the clay and the iron coming together, is the integration of these technologies, these fallen angel principles, and the destruction of men, essentially, all again under the guise of progress.
Big tech billionaires trying to break into President-elect Trump's inner circle. His inaugural fund getting million-dollar donations from Mark Zuckerberg's Meta, Jeff Bezos' Amazon, and OpenAI CEO Sam Altman. X's Elon Musk calls himself the first buddy.
I want to get ideas from them. Look, we want them to do well.
Tech companies, especially social media platforms, know they have a lot to lose. In addition to an incoming president who's accused them of censoring conservative speech, gripes with social media companies, from privacy to child safety, are some of the few things Democrats and Republicans in Congress can agree on. Scrutiny of their industry is about to get more intense. Take Trump's pick to lead the Federal Communications Commission, Brendan Carr.
For too long, you know, Republicans just sat by and said, look, if a large corporation wants to do something, who are we to stand in the way? And Democrats said, well, they're ideologically aligned with us, so we'll let them get away with it. I think that era is over.
Carr wrote an entire chapter in Project 2025 about how the FCC should be run, which includes making it easier to sue social media companies over how they moderate content. Platforms say that would force them to either moderate nothing or everything, drastically changing the landscape of the internet. Then there's the issue of TikTok. The company...
I think that, what was this? This is probably 2 weeks. 2 weeks old. And only a couple of days ago, Zuckerberg turned around and said, look, we're relinquishing censorship. We're going to have community monitoring and whatnot.
His last hope for dodging a ban in the U.S. could come from the Supreme Court. Or Trump may try to throw out a lifeline once he's in office.
You know, I have a warm spot in my heart for TikTok.
Other companies on notice are Google and Apple. Gail Slater has been nominated to lead the Department of Justice's antitrust division and will pick up ongoing cases against the companies seeking to end what the DOJ says are anti-competitive practices. When he nominated Slater, Trump said, "Big tech has run wild for years, stifling competition in our most innovative sector." Time will tell if Trump follows through on plans to crack down on big tech as its top executives try to convince him he has more to gain by working with them. In Washington, I'm Atrell Nishar reporting.
Yeah, they sort of frame it as, this guy, they're at odds with each other, but it can be further from the truth. The thing about Trump, like, he's actually a very entertaining guy. Like, I don't have a personal beef or vendetta with a guy. Like, I watched the Trump Joe Rogan podcast, and he comes across as an extremely intelligent guy who knows a lot about a lot of things. And there's just this, there's an enigma about him. It's like, who are you? Like, there are, you know, his potential ties to certain fraternities are there. Some would advocate that he's part of certain bloodlines, and you see his relationship with Scotland and the golfing community, which sounds a bit weird, but there's all kinds of connections going on there. Like, the dude's connected, and I still don't know. But an extremely fascinating character, and again, for all of this being said, and I know there's a serious backdrop to it, it is kind of entertaining and fascinating. I just want to highlight again, let's take a look. This is from a book that I read before, Seeing Through the Singularity. I referred to it before. Uncovering the Cosmic Conspiracy by Dr. Douglas Haugen. Great book, breaks down a lot of the intricacies of what's taking place. The Cosmic Context. The central theme of Seeing Through the Singularity concerns the manipulation and directing of human consciousness toward the creation of a new world order. The Gnostic Kabbalists that are birthing this order aim to shape the human perception of reality through occult practices and spellcasting in order to physically manifest the spiritual. An extreme example of merging the natural and supernatural is the employment of quantum entanglement technology, e.g. CERN. And again, there are people that think, like, you're off your rocker for suggesting that the things that are taking place with technology and science, so-called, has this spiritual backdrop, and, you know, it's dismissed. But with CERN in particular, you've only got to look for like 5 minutes and see, like, it's riddled with witchcraft. Through science and religion, alchemy, Kabbalists want to physicalize the supernatural into our reality. The meta-historical processes used thus far include the propagation of heliocentrism, Darwinism, and finally dispensationalism, in an effort to physicalize prophecy and to veil creation, intention, and order. The transcendental alchemy is the meta-historical inversion and re-evaluation of cosmic order through the control of human perception. Ultimately, the process requires the captivation of humanity's collective perception to open gateways between the physical and the spiritual worlds. The Kabbalists, the alchemists, need humanity to believe that that matter is literally affected by perception, which is at the center of quantum entanglement. Again, I just thought that summarizes quite nicely this relationship between technological advancement and the spiritual backdrop, which, again, it's Jacob's, it's the inversion of Jacob's ladder, you know. It's, you know, Yeshua said, I am the only way to the Father. No one can come to the Father except through him. And all of these are the inversion of that principle, this transcendental principle of ascending. Ye shall be as God, through means other than acknowledging Yeshua as Messiah. And again, I alluded to Metatron before and the Kabbalistic principles of the lesser Yahweh. It's absolutely rife with a antichrist spirit and this negating of the gospel message, essentially. Again, mapping Trump's connections to tech's right-wing brotherhood. I mean, this is like, it's not like he's just friends with a couple of guys in Silicon Valley. It's like, this dude is leading the charge. President-elect Donald Trump has surrounded himself with a tight-knit group of wealthy tech barons whose ideas will help define his second term in the White House. Now, irrespective of all of this spiritual backdrop, if this guy is a businessman and business is being not only driven but led by technology, it would only make sense that he would be in cahoots with them, not only to benefit himself, but to benefit his position, and essentially to be part of the same team. It's all one and the same. Three key allies, members of a known group as the PayPal Mafia, for their involvement in the money transfer company two decades ago, seem to be shaping policy and staffing decisions in Trump's incoming administration. And they are part of an expansive right-wing tech network that will accompany Trump back into power. So it's synonymous. It goes hand in hand. It has to be this way for things to move forward. The network is highly interconnected, sharing not only a political alliance, but also social ties, investment opportunities, anti-regulatory ideas, and geographic proximity in Austin, Texas, or Northern California. Some of their friendships and professional connections go back decades, and almost all the members of the network are men. Again, it's the club that we're not a part of. Tesla and SpaceX CEO Elon Musk has been called the shadow president or first buddy, and he wants to take a hatchet to the federal budget at Trump's request as co-lead of the newly formed Department of Government Efficiency with biotech entrepreneur Vivek Ramaswamy. Now, the interesting thing is the principle of a kingdom divided can't stand, and I think the assumption is made that a lot of these fraternities, shall we say, a lot of these orders and a lot of the members thereof are all in cahoots with each other, when I think that's not necessarily the case. I think there can be different opposing factions, there can be changes of the guard, and that can be dressed up in a way to the public that seems like it's the good guys, working against the bad guys, when essentially it's a power struggle within the elite circles, which can manifest in different ways. So I believe that part of this is a changing of the guard, whether it is of a particular order, whether it is of a particular bloodline. I'm not too sure. It's hard to pinpoint. But a lot of the moving away from the old ways of doing things, the old world order, so to speak, is now shifting to this new world strategy, which can only move forward under the guise of a technological advancement. David Sachs, a tech investor and podcaster, will have the role of Trump's tech czar, advising him on AI and crypto. Crypto is another fascinating one. Again, I cited the example of RFK Jr. and how he was advocating for transparency, financial transparency of the government by using blockchain. And to condense that, blockchain is a means of holding data, and that blockchain will be used to, whether it's for medical principles. Again, it's just this locking into this digital, metaverse, if you like, and how man is going to be conjoined with it, you know. Peter Thiel, here we got Trump's tech world connections, David Sachs, Elon Musk, Jared Isaacman. Like, not going to go through each one of these, but these are all big proponents of this advancement. They turned profits into power. Author of the book The Venture Alchemists, which came out this year and profiled many of the figures who are headed into the administration. And again, this is the nature of business in itself, where if business is centered and dependent and being led by technology, the very nature of business being that you are to drive profits, that's what you're doing. So whether even if these folks, and this is the hard thing to ascertain, like, are they, how knowingly and unknowingly are they contributing to this agenda? It's hard to tell. But even if you're just like a ruthless businessman who's just trying to make the money, you're going to be contributing to it one way or the other. A right-wing faction has coalesced with the usually progressive tech industry, and much of it is preparing to make Washington a second home for the next 4 years. The Trump transition team describes it as a natural fit. President Trump's agenda includes economic, energy, and regulatory policies that will allow the U.S. to reclaim its global dominance of innovation and technology. Again, this principle of who controls the tech controls the power. President Trump is surrounding himself with industry leaders like Musk as he works to restore innovation, reduce regulation, and celebrate free speech in his second term. Which is strange because, again, it's dressed up as this thing for the people, but really it's there's a lot more insidious motive behind this. Anything else? Yeah, just more of the same. I just want to finish with Matthew 6:24. No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. So, ending on that scripture, irrespective of your belief in terms of the nature of the motives and the role of technology and the prominence and possible appearance of the Antichrist in these days, these businesses are serving, they're definitely serving a God. And I would say they're serving the God of this world and not the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So with that, that was our foray into Terminator Trump and the End of Days. Well, that would make a pretty interesting film. But it's strange, it is playing out like a film. We've got these main characters that have been cast, playing their roles, and it's up to us to watch the movie to discern what direction the screenplay is going. And again, there's so much ambiguity with this. I don't have everything figured out at all. But again, more interesting advancements in current affairs and its relation to biblical prophecy. So again, anything I've touched on, anything you agree with, disagree with, any suggestions for myself to take a look at, are most welcome. Get involved with the comments once more. From our house to yours, this has been The Upper Room. I hope this reaches you well. Shalom, God bless, we love you, and Yah willing, we will see you on the next one.